Hello and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. I always love when we have moms of two or more NFL sons on the show, from the Gronkowski four boys to the Boza brothers. Today, we get to explore the journey of retired Super Bowl champs, Michael and Martellus Bennett. Yes, they are both individually Super Bowl champs. Michael won his Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks. He would have won two, honestly, with the Seahawks if they had only given the ball to Beast Mode. But I digress. We move on. Martellus Bennett won his Super Bowl with the New England Patriots. You all remember that game where the Falcons were up by 25 points. Anyway, I know Falcons fans would like to forget, so we'll move right along. These brothers growing up were thick as thieves and did everything together. Now retired from the game, they've carved out amazing careers as businessmen, authors, innovators, and activists. I'm so excited to learn more about their journey through the eyes and experience of their amazing mom and my friend, Penny Bennett. It's been a minute. I mean, the last time we talked was probably like 5 years ago when we did the ESPN piece.
Oh, yeah.
And let me tell you, darling, you have not aged a single bit.
Thank you. Thank you.
You are looking hotter than fish grease, honey.
Thank you, Annie. So do you. You look gorgeous. You're always looking gorgeous.
Before we get into the boys' journey, let's talk a little bit about their current phase in life. They're literally, among other things, authors, right?
Yes.
Martellus has a book out called Dear Black Boy, which encourages black boys to dream beyond sports.
Yes.
And then Michael has a book out, The Things That Make White People Uncomfortable. Ooh, they are uncomfortable right now just reading that title.
I know, right? And you know what? One of the some of this biggest audience for Michael's book, What Makes White People Uncomfortable, are white people that buy the book.
Yeah. What are some things that make white people uncomfortable?
Oh, my goodness.
How much time we got?
Yeah. And, you know, I wouldn't say all white people, but for me, there are some that feel threatened by people of color. Some white people actually feel threatened by that. Why? I don't know. You know, those type of things perhaps may make some white people feel uncomfortable. I mean, there's just a number of things, you know. Sometimes it could be, you know, we can just talk, you know, we can be real with each other. Sometimes some white people may find that offensive, you know, our tone, or, you know, we may have a stronger tone. You know, it may make white people feel uncomfortable sometimes. It could be just our culture, you know, the music, you know, the foods we eat.
A lot of white people and the whole system of white supremacy is that it elevates automatically the white skin color as superior above all, right? So when you are used to seeing yourself as the dominant, as the super race, you tend to put everybody else down.
Yes.
So what makes you uncomfortable is that when you have to accept someone else as your equal.
Exactly.
I personally don't think it's anything that we say or anything we do because we're just being us. They're just being them. We're just being us. So I think the being uncomfortable is like now I have to train my mind not to be as racist or not to be as prejudiced. So I have to kind of reverse that to accepting you as equal. That's why I always hate when people say, oh, I don't see color. I was like, what's wrong with seeing color? You got red on talking about so you don't see color. The problem is not seeing color. It's how you see color. Do you see it as an asset or a liability? That's
absolutely
the problem.
Absolutely. Right, like you said, this seem supreme, powerful, you know, and, you know, again, it threatened.
When I was little, and I was, of course, I'm darker skin, and, you know, kids used to make fun of me, you know, back in the 80s with the term, like, colored girl. So I always used to feel good. I was like, well, at least God took time coloring me in.
I love it. That's right.
I was like, he just left everybody else blank, but he took time coloring me. Like, that was my 8-year-old mind in dealing with the fact that someone tried to make me feel bad about the pigment of my skin.
So we need to implant that same thing, that positivity in our kids today, you know? So many of our children, you know, they, especially in Southern states, you know, I would say probably you see more of it in the South where they sometimes look at their white peers as if they are supreme or, you know, they're a little bit better. No. Uh-uh. Black is beautiful. You know, I tell our kids all the time, hey, we're all equal. You're no different. There's nothing that someone is doing that you can't do. You can do whatever you want to do.
And Penny, you work with students, and I will have to tell you that American educational system really from the textbooks we read. If you're a Black kid, you don't see your accomplishment and contributions to the evolution of America.
Absolutely. Yes.
The history of slavery and Jim Crow, all of that is like glossed over. It's like, oh, you know, it was 2 days of slavery and 4 hours of Jim Crow. Everything is great now. Go on. You know, it's just a lie. And then whenever you're experiencing racism, whether it's educational, corporate, home, everywhere, you're made to think, oh, you're making it up or you're too sensitive. Mm-hmm, so I think the beauty about today right now is that we all see it's not in our head.
Right. That's right. That's right. And you know what? That is so true. You know, like we don't teach enough Black culture, you know, African-American culture in our schools. We don't read it in the history book. If you read anything, it's a snippet, right? So I went to, I graduated from Grambling State University, HBCU. It's always been my desire, you know, with rearing my kids, bringing my kids up. You have to know the contributions that your ancestors, Blacks, have made. And, you know, I remember when my kids would have projects that they would have to write
into. And not just entertainment and sports, but in science.
Exactly.
It's economics. Technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. You're right. You're hitting it, Annie. It's not just sports. And you know what? Honestly, and there's nothing wrong with sports. But I remember I would tell my boys, I would tell them, listen, you know, it is what it is. You know, I look at sports when they were coming up. I say, hey, guys, that's just another way of entertaining the white man. You know, you know, they're paying you to entertain them. But guess what? You have to use it to your advantage. Be smart about it. Use your platform.
Exactly.
You know, when they were growing up, when they had to write projects, they always had to pick a Black inventor, somebody to write about. We took them to museums where they learned about the Black culture and all the contributions. And you know, a lot of us, we don't do that. A lot of our culture, we don't do that for our kids. Some of our kids, we keep them confined to just their environment, right? And we don't take them outside to explore. Okay, there is something more than just my small community. We can't rely on the education system all the time to teach our kids that. Teaching starts at home. It starts at home.
When Eli was in high school, we lived in Voorhees, New Jersey, which was predominantly white, affluent neighborhood. And I became like volunteer advisor to the African-American Culture Club they had. And I decided one way, because me by nature, I'm a producer, I'm a writer, I'm a storyteller. So I figured I wanted these kids to learn the contributions of Black people in this country. So I created this production, and it was like an award show called the Globies. Awards were given out, and it would be like different African-Americans who are from like the stoplight to whatever. Like we went through and put on such a great, great performance, right? I had the Black kids in our group saying they didn't even know.
Oh, yeah.
And then a bunch of the white kids that were in the school, they were like, this is a school which is one of the top school districts in New Jersey. White kids had no idea.
Isn't that something?
No idea that Black people ever did anything besides sing and play sports.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? There were Black scientists, economists, like all of this stuff, they had no clue.
So why is that left out? Why was that left out? Of the books, the history books and the teachers back then, and it's still being left out today. We still don't talk about it. We still don't embed that information into our teachings. We don't do that. It's still.
We
so
don't.
Why?
And it's systemic. And I'm hoping it changes.
Absolutely.
But what I love about what you've been able to do with Michael and Martellus is that, you know, I know that they're both not playing anymore, but I want to get into their journey. But I'm just fascinated by always how true to themselves they remain. When you came into Michael and Martellus's life, I know that the title of stepmother, but you have literally been their mom. What was that experience like for you watching them grow into their own?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm trying to just wonder where will I begin, you know? So, you know, again, you know, coming into Michael and Martellus' life, they were what, third grade? They were babies. And so I was the only mom that they had, the only mom that they knew. And always in rearing Michael and Martellus and raising my kids, it's like I raised them to be productive citizens, young men, strong men, powerful men, you know, men that would be positive contributions to society, you know, to raise families. But, you know, I didn't set out to raise them as to be these NFL players, professional athletes. And that's all good, but that's secondary, you know?
Yeah. It wasn't the objective.
Obviously, definitely wasn't the objective, you know? And I was a very young mother. I was a young mother right out of college, you know, when I first got divorced. I had to learn how to be a mother right away, right? I had to learn how to be a mother.
And you couldn't Google it. Did you Google it? How to be a mother?
I didn't Google it. I don't even know if what was technology even that sophisticated back then, right?
Penny, I'm sure there's a YouTube tutorial right now. How to be a mother. What kind of mother do you want to be?
Oh, gosh, I'm sure. Yeah, they're all
How to be a black mother. You don't take your behind a bit. You know, all this. How to be a white mother. Stay up as late as she was.
You can have company in your room, right? Oh my gosh.
At 13, the devil is a liar.
Devil is a liar. Yeah, Michael Martellus, they already knew. That was not happening. That was absolute no. As a matter of fact, you can't even have company in the house when we're not home. So,
come on now.
And they had curfews. They always had curfews. They knew that. They had curfews. They had chores. They had responsibilities. They already knew.
And this was in Texas, right?
Yes, this was definitely in Texas. They spent mostly all of their years in school in Texas, even college, you know, when they went to A&M.
Yep, Texas A&M. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the boys being very young, they were just, and people always ask me, well, what kind of kids were they growing up? I tell people all the time, they're just kids, like any other kid, you know. And it was so hard. It was so difficult for me to start looking at them, I guess, in the light or through the eye that others saw them as, you know, like, oh, they're these famous people. I'm like, really? Michael and Martellus? They're famous? And I would joke with them sometime, and I still joke with them every now and then. Hey, son, can I get an autograph? Oh, mom, you know, they're just joking. But, you know, because to me, they're still my kids. They're just big kids now, you know?
So how did they discover, how did they discover the passion for football? We go in, you know, I think the boys are 16 months apart. So it's almost, did they both just gravitate to the same thing?
I think just like boys, trying to find their niche when they're in school. And we always kept them active, you know, Idle Mind is the Devil's Workshop. So we always kept those guys active in the community, just doing something. And so they started out playing Little League, and we would support them. We were like the team parents, you know, and we would go to the games. We'd make sure that we had the cooler of water, you know, try to support them in whatever they did. Now, and I remember even in middle school, Martellus was always that well-rounded athlete. He was well-rounded. Martellus was, he had so much energy. He wanted to do everything. He's very competitive. If you say he can't do it, he's going to work that much harder to prove to you that he can. So Martellus played, he started out, he played football and basketball. And I never forget Michael being the older one, you know, he was, you know, to him, it's like, this is my little brother. I got to kind of, you know, keep up and do the same thing. I remember Michael being in middle school, trying out for basketball. And he had worked so hard going to practice all week. And so that Friday, probably was like a Friday afternoon, they put the roster up, and he comes running in the house, and he's crying and he's boo-hooing. And I'm like, Michael, what's wrong? I didn't make the team. Oh my gosh, Annie. It's just like, so I had to give him this pep talk about, you know, Michael, don't give up. Remember Michael Jordan. He didn't make the team when he first, you know, tried out. If it's something you truly, really want to do, you just keep at it, son. You didn't make it this time. You know, just keep doing it. You know, you can play basketball if that's your dream. If that's what you truly desire, you can play football. And I think just over time, Michael found his niche with football. But honestly, I don't think that really didn't come until later. Now, he played football in middle school, high school. He was great. He did track. But in college, Michael just, he started to soar. And even then, he still was in the shadow of his younger brother. For many, many years, Michael lived in the shadow of his younger brother, Martellus. And you know what, Annie? That was so hard for us. When we would run into people, we would see people. You know what? Everyone would always say, hey, so how's Martellus doing? How's Martellus doing? And I'm like, Michael and Martellus both are doing fine, you know? Wow. And most people looked at Michael like he was the younger brother because his name wasn't always in lights and headlines. When Martellus was in school, he always was, he was in every news article that came out, you know? He went to every game, you know, every bowl game. He went to the Army game, All-American game. Michael wasn't picked for those games. I remember in high school, Michael finally got picked for a smaller game, the East-West Shrine game. I don't know if you ever heard of games. Small.
Yep, I have.
And when I tell you, we made such a big deal out of that. We gave him so much praise because all your kids are different, right? You know, every kid is different. Michael needed that, you know, he needed that extra praise because he always saw the attention that Martellus got and he wasn't receiving that.
But how did that affect their relationship?
Oh my gosh, that's the thing. Those guys are closer than closer than close, and they are still closer than closer than close today. They are probably each other's biggest advisor, critic,
cheerleader.
I mean, those guys are so close, and that's because that's how we raise them, to be close. You are your brother's keeper.
Always. And you want for your brother what you want for yourself. And also, they both end up going to Texas A&M. What made Texas A&M the school for them?
Oh, my goodness. So, obviously, Martellus went to Texas A&M first. Michael came out of school first. But coming out of school, Michael, he signed what was it, Texas Tech. And he realized, this is not for me. Why am I up here in Texas Tech? So he had to sit out a semester. And the semester he sat out, Martellus ended up signing to go to A&M the following year. So Michael kind of followed in Martellus' footsteps, like, okay, I want to be with my brother. We want to play together, you know. And for us, for me as parents, like, yes, always play together. You know, it makes it easier for us, right? So Martellus, he was looking at several schools at the time. It was out of LSU, UT, A&M, and then he was thinking about going to Duke to play basketball because they were recruiting it. Martellus was an amazing basketball player. Now, he was.
Wow.
I always, and I still do to this day, thought he was a better basketball player than he was a football player. But he decided to play football at A&M. But at the time when Martellus came out, A&M was kind of rebuilding their team, and he wanted to be a part of that. He wanted to be a part of a team that was building. UT was already there. And he's like, you know what? I want to go to a team where I can be part of the building and make a difference. So that's how he ended up at A&M. And then Michael ended up coming to A&M with him.
I didn't know this until I was reading the research that Michael was undrafted.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
When he signed with Seahawks.
Yes.
That is insane to
that's
me.
Right.
How did that go? Because Martellus was drafted in the second round, right? For his. And and Michael was undrafted. How was that experience?
Annie, that was so hard for us. Oh, my goodness. That was so hard. That was just... So Martellus came out of A&M. He left A&M a year early. Before Michael, and Michael was still there that year. Like you said, Martellus was drafted second round by the Dallas Cowboys. We had this.
In 2008.
You know that. Look at you. You have all the information. So we end up having just a small group of friends over, you know, to another area, kind of like another friend secluded area. And the media, everybody came, and it's draft day, and we're sitting there anxious. I mean, you know what that feels like on draft day, and then we're just waiting. My cell phone ends up ringing, right? And we're just waiting. I'm holding my phone. Everybody's holding their phones in their hand, just waiting. We're waiting for a call, and all these teams are calling, and they're telling, I'm going to take you in this round. I'm going to take you in this round. I'm going to be my next pick, and we're sitting there watching. Nobody calls him, right? Nobody's picking him. His name is not called. So all of a sudden, my cell phone rings, and I pick up the phone, hello, and he's like, yeah, this is Jerry Jones with the Dallas Cowboys, and I just freeze on the phone. Who? Hello? And I'm just, Martellus is Jerry Jones. So, you know, and then Jerry called, tells Martellus, hey, Martellus, we're getting ready to pick you now.
What did Jerry sound like? Jerry sounded like money. Like money on the phone.
He smelled like money.
$4 billion on the phone right now. How you doing with your broke selves?
I'm going to help y'all. Oh, you're so crazy.
How y'all doing with your poor selves? This is $4 billion on the phone.
You are so crazy. So anyway, you end up getting drafted by Dallas, right? And we celebrated. We cheered. It was awesome. The following year, Michael decides to come out. Oh, my goodness. So we kind of did the same thing, small little setup. You know, we were actually at home, just small, just locked down. Watching the draft, first round, second round, we're like, okay, second round, yeah, he'll go second round. Third round, fourth round, now it's getting serious, right? And the difficult thing is Michael seeing all these guys that he's played with or played against, and his stats were way better than them, and they're all getting drafted. Michael Bennett's name was not called. Oh, my gosh, it was the most difficult thing. Somewhere during the draft, he decides to go fishing. He goes fishing with his dad. He's like, I just can't watch it no more. So he goes fishing. He gets upset going fishing. And he throws the poles and everything in the water.
That's one way to catch the fish. The fish can catch themselves. The fish was like, I know you're upset. We'll just get in here and we'll go home with you.
So frustrated. Oh my gosh. So I'm still sitting at home and I'm just like, okay, I'm just praying like, oh my gosh. Just for him. You know, I want him to be okay. If they're okay, whether you're drafted or not, or whether you play, I don't care what you're doing. As long as you're okay, I'm okay.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
So when he comes back from fishing, I'm still sitting inside and he walks in the door, you know, as if I could see it all over his face, Annie. And he just walks over to me. He literally gets in my lap. Now he's huge, you know, over a 6-footer, 200 pounds. He sits in my lap and curls up in a fetal position and just break down and cry. Oh my gosh. It's like somebody just tore my heart out. And so we're just bawling. I'm crying. I'm holding this big 6-footer in my arms and Michael, it's okay. You know, what God has for you is for you, you know, stay strong, you know, just encouraging. That's all you can do. You know, it's so hard.
I'm telling you, Penny, I have to be honest with you. When you got these boys in third grade, fourth grade, you didn't know how to be a mother, but you have literally, in that moment, mastered it.
You're going to make me cry. Thank you so much.
No, seriously, you mastered it. It was just because when the heart is open and the heart is pure, divine things come out. You know what I mean? And what to say and what to be in that moment.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So kudos to you. I'm sorry. I'm a Penny Bennett fan. When them jerseys, when your super fan jerseys coming out, that's what I want.
Thank you so much. I'm about to work on that, right? But you know, it was hard. It was a difficult draft day for Michael. It was. And you know, even during the journey when they would be at A&M, you know, after a game, you know, we'd all be at Bright Stadium where the boys go in and, you know, they would get dressed and changed and they come out and all these A&M fans would be lined up just waiting for all the guys. Martellus would have a line wrapped around the building, signing autographs. Michael may sign one or two autographs and, you know, then he'll be standing over there with me and we'll just be talking and, you know, I'll try to keep his attention for Martellus because we had to sit and wait for him to sign 1,000 autographs. And that was hard. It was so difficult. And, you know, even for me as a mom, you know, after all of that, you know, everyone always, oh, how's Martellus? Oh, Martellus is this, Martellus is that. Like, okay, did you forget I have another son? There, Michael's okay too. So it was just hard walking through that journey. But oh my goodness.
But he found his place.
He found his place. He ended up signing with the Seahawks, stayed there for, oh my gosh, I think Michael was not with the Seahawks very long. And, they had lost the position and they needed to drop Michael from the roster over the weekend so they can pick up a different position. But over the weekend, you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. If I drop your name from the roster, hey, you're out there, you're free. So Michael, in the middle of the night, he got a call when Seattle dropped him from the roster in the middle of the night. Tampa Bay swooped in and picked him up. So Michael never played a seasonal game with Seahawks. Michael was undrafted. Seahawks just end up signing him. You know, he got to work out for the team. Okay, come on. And he ended up making the team. But still, he never played his first game. He was preseason, but he never played a seasonal game with him. So in the middle of the night, he gets a call and like, oh my gosh, we dropped him because we needed this position for a Sunday game. And like I said, Tampa Bay came and swooped him up. He had to catch a red-eye flight in the middle of the night to head to Florida. He had just finished furnishing his apartment, got everything set up. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm barely finished unpacking my bags. But hey, this is your job. This is what you got to do. He had to get up and he flew to Florida. He ended up staying with Tampa Bay for 4 years. Michael made his mark in Tampa. He made his mark. Oh my, I'm so proud of him. I'm so proud of Michael and Martha.
Mark in Tampa, but he hit the stage. He hit the stage with Seahawks. I didn't even know, you know, I mean, Tampa was like sidebar because
exactly.
you end up winning the Super Bowl, right?
Yes.
Won the Super Bowl. So you have two Super Bowl experience. You have the Ooh. Super Bowl you won. And then the one you should have won if they would have given the ball to Beast Mode.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. That's something we would never, no one in Seattle, that game would go down in history. No one would ever forget that.
Oh my God. But I love when you relive that game because you're just like, okay, we got this.
Annie,
We got this. And then it was like the tale of two emotions in the same circle of minutes.
Annie. So look, the first Super Bowl game, we're in New York, right? We're playing Denver. That was actually a boring game because Seahawks just blew them out, right? So at the end of the game, it's like, before the game really ends, Seahawks fans are all running downstairs to celebrate, you know, on the field with our guys. It's like, hey! So when we had the next Super Bowl in Arizona, like you said, where Lynch should have gotten the ball and ran it in, few seconds left on the clock, and it was same situation. We're up. We already know. Lynch just gonna run it in. We good. Oh, my goodness. So we're packing up. We're in the stands. We got this. We got our purses. We're getting ready to run downstairs to the field to celebrate. And all of a sudden, Russell throws the ball. We get an interception. We're like, what the heck just happened? The whole crowd just went numb. It was just like silence. We was like, what is going on? It was crazy. It was crazy. And that's one of those hard losses, right? Because when you know you have it.
Because you tasted win.
You tasted victory. You tasted that win.
It's like the ice cream truck pulled up. You got your ice cream. You're about to lick and all of a sudden it drops.
That's the worst.
And it drops in dog poop. So it's not like you can pick it up and eat it again.
Exactly, right? You can't pick it up and eat it again.
It's gone.
Oh, my God. That was the hardest. That was very difficult.
It's the hardest. How did Michael handle that loss? Because after that, the team was never, I mean, they went from the Legion of a boom, a Legion of Doom to like, I mean, the team just kind of, you know, they had Richard Sherman on that defense and it just changed. Everything changed after that.
Yeah, everything changed. I think the guy's spirits, it was just like, what the heck were we thinking? Coach, why did you call that play? You know,
why are you chewing that gum so fast, Coach? Be careful on that damn gum.
He has some good teeth. I don't know how you chew that gum like that. I'm like,
he still got teeth. He has all his teeth.
Well, he's there. His teeth, there's somebody's teeth, but whatever they are, they're good. Because he chews that gum like crazy.
So let's get to Martellus, though. Martellus played with various teams, but he won a Super Bowl 50. Let's talk about that. That was a Super Bowl in Houston. When the Falcons were up, like what, by 25 points, was it?
Yes.
New England came to win. What was that like for you?
Let me tell you, honestly, I never gave up. We never gave up because we know what type of quarterback we had in New England, right? It's like, there's too much time on the clock. We know what kind of type of quarterback Brady was. Tom Brady, like, really? Too much time. Don't get overconfident. And we came right back and, oh, my goodness.
Let me tell you, I was at that game, right? I went to that game.
Yes.
It was so funny. There was this little kid in front of me who was crying. He was a Patriots fan. He was crying the whole, really, like, aggressively crying the whole game. And they were losing. So I would figure, you know what, let me go ahead and leave. A friend of mine said, let's go ahead and leave because I wanted to kind of avoid the traffic. Child, when we were leaving, that's when I said, what the heck just happened? And all I could think about was that little boy. I'm like, he's not crying anymore.
He's laughing. He's jumping up and down, right? That was, oh, my goodness. You know what? And for us, that was, like, the ultimate. Because Michael had won his Super Bowl, and Michael had already played in two Super Bowls. Martellus, even though he was in the league before Michael, he had never went to the Super Bowl. He'd never played in the Super Bowl. So this is like his first Super Bowl win. I'm like, oh my gosh, what more do you want? Like, that's such a blessing, right? What a blessing for both of the boys to have played in Super Bowl, and both of them have Super Bowl rings. I mean, it's just a blessing. That's the ultimate. And living their dream.
And isn't that a life lesson? So, like, you're able to look at them and say, you know what, in life, celebrate each other's successes, even if it's not yours per se. When you celebrate someone else's, it happens for you. And they had always done that. I mean, undrafted. Michael retired in 2020, you know, the pandemic year, and ended up playing in two Super Bowls, winning one, a defensive powerhouse. And Martellus is able to, has beautiful family, an author, also animator, and just all they used that platform of football just for what it was.
And that was my desire, you know, as a mom, as a parent. That's what you desire, guys, because you know what? Football, you're not going to always play football. You need to be able to do something after football, you know, use your platform to be able to grow and give back. to society and give back to your family, give back to your children. You know, it's not about just what's on the field, because guess what? Not every kid is going to make it to the NFL or NBA. You know, that's almost every kid's dream, but not everyone, every kid is going to do that. There is more than just sports. There is so much more. So this is your opportunity to now show and give back. And you know, those guys, you know, I'm being a parent, right? I'm being a mother. I love my kids. But I'm so, so proud of what they have done, more so off the field than on the field. Though that's what's made me proud, you know.
That's awesome. You know, my late pastor used to always say, your destiny should be discovered and not decided.
Yes.
So
yes,
if you're a young person out there, and it's okay not to know off bat what I want to do exactly.
Absolutely.
You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Because it's such a journey. I'm 46 years old and I'm discovering new talents that have even been hidden, right? Eli's 25 and honestly, he's still trying to figure out
what
do I want to do? It's such a discovery. And what I love about your boys is like, they kept doing different things until they found the thing.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? It's okay. You know, animation, I know Martellus has traveled to Asia, you know, learning about anime. I mean, allow yourself to grow in that. But let me ask you this. If you had to do anything differently, what would it be?
Oh my gosh, what would I do differently, Annie? That's a tough one. What would I do differently? That is a tough question.
I thought of it all by myself.
Oh my gosh, I bet you did. That's why it's such a tough question. What would I do differently? You know, I have to be transparent. I honestly have to be transparent and say this. And this has been something that I've always wanted to do, but shame on me for not doing it. You know, when the boys were growing up, one of my desires to do was always, like during the holidays, whether Christmas or Thanksgiving, it was to always take my kids to like the Salvation Army to serve. I've always, always wanted to do that. That's just like something that's been so deep. And I guess being caught up in, because that wasn't a part of my family tradition growing up. And when we're raising our own families, our own kids, we tend to bring some of our traditions, you know, over to our families as we're creating our own families, right? And so I got so caught up in all those years of just, you know, the norm, my family traditions, and, you know, just being with family, cooking, eating, laughing, just enjoying each other. And I never, ever got to fulfill that dream with my children. And that's something that I've always wanted to do. And so my desire now is that they will one day be able to do that with their families and their kids. I've always wanted to do that. So, I mean, I don't know. It may be something so simple, but I would change that.
You know, I think once we get over COVID, I think you can still do that. I think that's great to get the whole family to really introduce that. I know when Eli was in college, the only thing I would ask for Christmas, I say, you know, when you come home, let's go to the senior home. And he will, I put on the little production. I am such a production queen.
Yeah, stuff like that. I love that.
Because during the holidays, a lot of them families don't come to visit them. So you have senior citizens who are just in these homes by themselves. So I would sing to them. Eli will read the scripture, family.
That's
like,
so,
you know, that's
heartwarming.
What,
I love that.
Yeah,
I love
so that's
stuff
what,
like
I
that.
Miss doing that. I miss doing that. I love old people.
Oh, I have this special place. You have no idea in my heart. I can sit and talk to the elderly for hours, for days.
The wisdom.
I love it. The wisdom. Just the wisdom. And just knowing that.
And their memory is bad,
like
so they're not going to lie to you. You know what
they're
I mean?
Not going to lie. They're not going to. Look, if you've gained 10 pounds, they're going to tell you, ooh, you look big. If your hair not right, they're going to tell you.
They'll be like, oh, so you've been eating.
Exactly. But, you know, I can, you know, and I just want my kids to be able to do that. And like you said, we could still do that as a family. I do remember the closest I've come to that, but was 1 year Martellus was with Dallas, and we fed at the Salvation Army. Oh my gosh, like over 500 people. And it was game day because, you know, Dallas play on Thanksgiving. That was like so heartfelt to me. But, you know, it's something I want kids to, you know, I wish that my kids would have experienced that all alone, you know, coming up, and to make that a family tradition, doing things like that. But when we serve those families at the Salvation Army, that Thanksgiving day in Dallas, that meant the world to me. Annie, we had tickets to go to the game. I ended up giving my tickets away. I didn't even go to the game. You know what I did? I stayed there with those 500 families, and we watched the game on a big screen because
wow.
That's the environment I want it to be in. That's where I want it to be.
That is awesome. So you have part of it. You have part of your tradition. It's alive. And I'm hoping when your sons hear this, they will say, you know what? This is it's never too late to create a tradition.
Oh, it's never, that's true. It's never too late.
Never too late. You're still here. So let's look at, you know, we deal with your sons have played for multiple teams. How were you able to handle that transition, like from changing jerseys, you know, the different color? Because there are some moms who, God bless you, you get the same team for at least a majority of the career, right? But it's always about the name on the back, not the color, right? Is that the philosophy?
I know it is. It really is. And I'll tell you why that's the philosophy. Because we have always been huge Seahawks fans, absolutely despise Patriots. We love the Seahawks, we despise the Patriots, right? Because of that one game. We hated the Patriots. And then shortly after that, when Martellus decides to play for the Patriots, we're like, really?
Really?
So, yeah, that was so hard. That was so hard for me to put on a Patriots jersey, Patriots anything. But obviously, you know, I soon got over it and I realized, okay, it's not about the team. We grew to love the team. We absolutely grew to love the team. It was just that animosity still within us from losing that Super Bowl that we should have lost. You never get over it, right?
You never get over it. You're going to be in your deathbed. You're going to be in your deathbed in 500 years. Like, you should give them the ball to beast mode.
Exactly, right? But, you know, when the boys end up playing professional ball and having to split my time going from Michael's game to Martella's game, going from East Coast, West Coast, it was like, you know, I'd leave a game sometimes. I remember being in Seattle, leaving the game. Okay, after the game, headed to the airport, flying to Chicago to go to Martellus game with the Bears. Oh, my gosh. It was exhausting. It was fun, but it is exhausting. And switching jerseys, the switching of jerseys. There are some games, you know, like they played
at the airport. At the airport. You know, we only have a few minutes with you, so I have to ask. When each of them came to you and said, you know, Mom, I'm thinking about retiring, what made that time and that decision right for each of them?
You know, for Martellus, it was, I spent my time on the field. Now it's time for me to focus on me and something that I want to do. You know, I want to leave a legacy for my daughter. And I want to share with other young Black boys, young kids, that it's not always about athleticism, you know? Martellus has always been an inventor, an author, there's a creator.
Innovative mind, yeah.
Innovative. So Martellus started his company called the Imagination Agency, and he just took pen to paper, and Martellus would write all the time. And he started writing books, and he would write lyrics. He's always been that person. He's always had that talent down in here. He actually recently signed a deal with Disney. He has a cartoon that he's doing. That's just him. He's always been that person. So he's like, this is my dream. He's written short films, you know. He has children's books that's out, you know. Hey, AJ, he has apps that's out, children's apps that's out. Martellus, like you said, the innovator. It's always been him. So when he decided to retire, he's like, now it's time for me to truly live out my dream. This is something that he wanted. And so that's when he decided to retire. Michael has been, you know, he's been such an activist, you know, being involved in, oh my gosh, just
Black Lives Matter and really speaking out against police brutality.
Yes. You know, and even Michael, he experienced his own personal kind of racism when he was in Vegas once with some friends of the team watching a boxing fight. Someone started shooting and, you know, cars, hear shots, the crowd runs. And he's, you know, they're all running. And Michael, being a big Black guy, ended up being slammed on the floor with a gun pulled to his head. And, you know, I'll shoot your brains off. And he's like, but I didn't do anything. I remember getting that call at 3 a.m. It was crazy. And so, you know, I just said all that to say everything on Michael's journey that he's been through and just what's down in him, he's like, I need to do more. And he wanted to give back. And for Michael, retiring was kind of like, should I retire? Oh, no, man, I think I should retire. I need to settle. And you know what I told them? I want you to retire the game before it retires you. You don't want the game to retire you. I want you to be able to retire while you still have your health and your strength. And you can still run and you can play with your kids, you know. Retire the game before it retires you. And you know when that's the right time. You know when it's the right time. You know when you have reached your peak, you know, and everyone's peak in football or whatever you do is different. You know, when you have reached your platform, you know, then you could do something else. And I think Michael, he's found that, you know, he's found it. He's like, I'm retired.
I have to ask, when you got that call at 3 a.m., that must have been scary. How did it make you? Because I don't think people understand when you have Black children, especially Black sons, and you get a call in the middle of the night about some police activity. It's a nerve recation, let me make up some word, that most don't even understand.
No, and would never understand unless you have that that little black child, you know? You know it happens, and it can happen to anyone, but that part of you, you know, you always just plead the blood of Jesus, and God, cover my kids, you know, when they're coming and going, and you just think like, okay, my child is safe, my child is safe. And getting that call at 3 a.m, it's like, oh my goodness. And hearing my son cry and hearing the fear in his voice, it was just, I'll, you know, just pray and encourage her. That Michael was disturbed over that for a long time, you know, because he's thinking, you know, my wife could be a widow. My kids, you know, they could be without a father, you know, just like that mom. I saw
in that moment,
I saw my life just.
Because you're never given a benefit of a doubt, ever.
Never given a benefit of a
doubt. You're always perceived first as a threat.
And that's what it was. He was a threat because he was a big black man, totally innocent. A gun pulled to your head. I will kill you. I'll shoot you. For what? Because I'm a big black man and I haven't done anything. Oh my gosh. You know, this, as a group of people, as a society, we have to stop doing that. You know, it's just such an injustice. You know, it doesn't matter the color of your skin.
Please talk to the white people. Please talk to the white people. Because whenever it comes to racism and people look at it, black people, I'm like, no, you can't. It's like asking somebody, like a rape victim, it's not up to that person to stop rape. It's up to the rapist to stop rape. So racism is not for black people to stop. It's for white people to stop, right? It's just, I mean, let's just call a thing a thing.
It is what it is. And you know what? You know, I wish more white people would just imagine, okay, have empathy. Put yourself in that person's shoes. What if the tables were turned, and what if it was racism against your little white kids out there and guns being pulled to their heads, being slammed down, being killed for no reason, being lynched? How would you feel as a parent? Put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Empathy, that's what's missing.
Yeah, it's empathy. But, you know, unfortunately, some of them have that sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
You know, like we talked about earlier.
Because, like, the police is there for us. Not for them. Yeah. The police is there to keep
exactly.
us in line. Clearly, as we've recently seen, as those domestic terrorists stormed the Capitol and nothing happened to them. That's a whole nother show, boys and girls.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a whole nother show. Because I think, and everyone knows, you know, if it was Black Lives Matter, it would have been totally different, right?
It would have been Bloody Wednesday. Let's just say
yes,
that.
Yes, it would
so,
have.
you know, I'm just, I, first of all, I've missed you.
I miss you, my friend.
I'm so proud of, because you know, when you're an NFL mom, every guy who plays is like your son.
Yes, right? That's so true.
It doesn't even matter. And so when I watch Michael and Martellus's career, I'm proud. I think what I like most about them is that they are outspoken. Because in this league, guys are always, I mean, it's the nature of the sports. You don't want to rock the boat.
Yes.
But Michael and Martellus have always spoken and lived in their truth. And we can see why. Because they were raised right. They were raised with a sense of accountability and with a sense of it's not just about you. You have to make this world better for the next person. My late grandmother used to always say, if you eat a tomato, you plant a tomato. That way there's never a shortage. Just somebody else is always going to come and have something. And you've done that.
Thank you, Annie. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And I tell people all the time, you know, the Michael and Marcellus, they're just big kids to me. And they always will be big kids. I don't care how old they get, 40, 50, 60, they always be big kids to me. You know, and they're not perfect, you know, just like no one.
Nobody is.
They make mistakes, you know. But I am very proud of their successes and what they've done. And again, I would say off the field. Both on the field, but more so off the field.
I have to ask you a question that I always ask all the other moms, all the other parents. We have to talk about the media, right? How the media portrays your kids. How are you able to handle that? Because I'm sure you will read some things about your son. And you're like, what the? That's like, how did you guys handle that? Because you have two outspoken young men. And we know how the media machine works when a team wants you, when they want to trade you. How did your family handle that?
You know, I think with my kids and for me, it's being sure of yourself and knowing who you are, you know, in spite of. You have to know who you are. People are always going to say something about you, you know, when you're catching every pass, when you're making every touchdown, you're going to be the superstar.
Ooh.
Miss one pass. Miss one pass. Oh, my goodness. You're going to be crucified. So it's just knowing who you are. And you can't always entertain the toxic noise that comes from others on the outside. You have to stay focused. have your vision, have tunnel vision, and just kind of remain on the journey, because we all know the media can make you or it can break you. Again, you have to just tune it out. And it was not always easy. You know, my boys, you know, the Michael and Martellas are always, like you said, outspoken. And, you know, I would tell them, don't even entertain everything. Some stuff just is not even worth entertaining, you know. And for me, I don't even listen to all that, you know. It's just if you find yourself listening to everything on social media and just on TV.
You will be all over the place. Your emotions will be all over the place. You'll be like a paper on any day.
You'll be all over the place. Yeah, so you kind of have to tune that out. I have a friend, her son is in high school and he's playing, he's a huge kid. He's playing basketball right now. And just this week, someone was criticizing him because they feel like he should be LeBron. You're too big to not play like this. And it really got to my friend's heart and she was all in her feelings. I said, you know what? That's just the beginning. You've got to have some thick skin.
Welcome to the madness.
Welcome to the madness, because it's only going to get worse. And when you are in this in the world of sports, you got to have, you have to have some thick skin.
I think the one advice I would give is like, no, well, they didn't make you, so they can't break you, because
Thank you.
You're a God
That's
creation.
Right.
The talent is God given. Your job is to focus on what is it that I can do? What is it that God has given me to control? He didn't give me the ability to control anybody else's thoughts. You know what I mean? I always say, you know, I quote, if you live by the acceptance of others, you'll die by their rejection. You can't. It's up to us. And as parents, and you've done it well, to insulate our kid and just realize that's noise.
It's just noise. That's right. And you know what? When I hear that, it reminds me of one of my favorite songs by Brian Courtney Wilson. Noise. I can hear clearly now that the noise is gone. You gotta tune that noise out so you can hear clearly.
You gotta tune it out.
We all do.
Learning to tune out the noise is such an important life skill. Noise is what? Thoughts and opinions of others who aren't invested in your growth or success. So honestly, they don't matter. I loved how Penny always made sure Michael knew how special he was in the family and how that love and that support helped to nurture his confidence and the closeness of the two brothers. Every success was celebrated, and I love that. It's always a fun time with Penny Bennett. I love her heart. She came into this family and loved those kids and made a lasting impact. Kudos to her and her husband, Michael Bennett Sr. I always say, blood doesn't make you family, love does. And love and unconditional support are what Penny gave to Michael and Martellus and helped nurture them into the men they are today. Which leads me to today's Annie's Clapback. It's Women's Appreciation Month, though we should honestly appreciate women every day of every month. But this is our recognized month, the month of March, so we'll take it. I'd like to applaud each of my NFL moms who have raised and nurtured grown men who are great individuals, good husbands, fathers, and leaders. Women's influence is often undermined and overlooked in this masculine sport of football. Some idiots have even said a woman can't raise strong men. Well, we continue to debunk that ignorance. As Napoleon once said, the future destiny of a child is always the work of the mother. So kudos to these women, these accomplished women who have put in the work, the love, and the support. Thank you. Thank us. Yeah, thank us. As always, thank you for listening. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. And I'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, or share the show with someone you think will love it. It only costs you maybe 3 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review. Much appreciated. And again, thanks for listening, and see you next time, family.